Is it possible to use the outdoors as a classroom for teaching communities how to build more equitable and inclusive human ecosystems with the Earth as a role model? Let's find out. I'd like to welcome back writer, outdoor enthusiast, and educator Dan Kreisberg, as well as Camille Simone Edwards, director of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Program at Friends Academy. Friends of mine, welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Good to be back.
Hello.
Dan, it's nice to have you back on here. We had a great conversation recently. Now we have Camille with us to talk about something that when I heard about this, Dan brought this to my attention. I thought, wow, this is just part of the fabric of what we do here on Papa Bear Hikes. And that is having an inclusive outdoor community, breaking down barriers, making people feel welcome out there. What you're doing, Camille, you know what? I'm going to let you tell us about it, but let's start by you telling us about you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me here. I'm so grateful to be sharing space with you in this awesome podcast environment, and also with my partner here, Dan. My name is Camille Simone Edwards. I'm the Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at Friends Academy. We are a private Quaker school on Long Island. Outside of doing that practitioning work for Friends, I have been working in the diversity, equity, inclusion space as a practitioner for 14 years. And I also have my own consulting practice. I specialize in diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioning, one-on-one executive coaching, and also work around community engagement in general. I sort of position myself in the work as a people and culture practitioner. So just helping people have fierce conversations, connecting young people to their passion work, but also helping people in DEI work find ways to do the work in a way that is accessible and sustainable so that we have practices that are made to last. And so this program that Dan and I have together is just so special for me because we found a way to marry our passions and to help people find access points to doing equity practitioner work. Yeah.
You're right. You know, to have a seminar, a one-day workshop, yeah, sustainable. But when Dan started explaining to me about what you're doing and the young people and the combination of the outdoors, because it's those outdoor experiences oftentimes that stay with us throughout our lives from childhood into adulthood, into our adult lives. Now you're taking your background, your area of expertise, Dan's passion for the outdoors and bringing them together to prepare these young people on what the world's going to be when they're adults.
Absolutely. And it feels so special because it's unique to who we both are. You know, something that we talk about a lot in DEI practitioning is people finding who they authentically want to be in this work, because it's for all of us. If you were a person of the world, there are diversity, equity, and inclusion implications for you. We want people to have access points that feel real for them to think about, how am I showing up in this lifetime to be, because you are inherently diverse. All of us deserve equality. All of us deserve points of equity. Equity, this idea that we all need different things to live full, happy, prosperous lives. That's about all of us. Inclusion is about all of us. So if we're thinking about the fact that we want everybody to feel like they've got a seat at the table, what's something that lowers the stakes? What's something that belongs to all of us? What's something that deserves all of our care? And so thinking about how we belong to the earth and how it's our responsibility to also take care of it, this idea of being environmental stewards, for Dan felt so obvious and so clear. And for me as a practitioner, I'm always trying to find a way to integrate this learning that feels so high stakes and so scary sometimes, diversity, equity, and inclusion, all these conversations that can feel so political, so emotionally charged so quickly, and go, all right, let's have this conversation in a different environment. Let's literally step outside and find a way to give everybody a space to be themselves. So Dan, in the way that Dan approached me during COVID, was a game changer. It changed my life to think about having this conversation in a different context. It's been amazing.
And the outdoors, you know, and people have been listening for a while now, and they've probably heard me say this more times than they want to hear. You know, when we get out there, when we do, like with me, I do 2 and 3 week hikes at a time in the summer, and it's almost a great equalizer. When we're out there, we don't see each other as the college professor and the recent high school graduate. You know, we're all just out there and enjoying this. And I've had these talks with people who are Triple Crown hikers.
Yeah, I think being outside, even if it's just on an outdoor lesson for an hour, it breaks down some of the barriers between the kids because they're seeing each other in different ways. You know, the student who's maybe super quiet in the classroom is suddenly the one that's really good at catching grasshoppers, or, you know, the one that doesn't want to pick up anything, this other one will pick up the rock to find the worms underneath it, or somebody, you know, really good at spotting the bird. You know, like, it kind of breaks down some of their roles that they're playing when they're inside. So yeah, I think that's exactly right. The outside is that opportunity for everyone to just be a different part of themselves, and for a lot of them, find a different part of themselves, because a lot of these kids aren't spending as much time outdoors as, you know, kids in the past.
And as an educator, let me ask you this, observing these young people out there, does it bring us, do you kind of find yourself saying, okay, these are our primal roots. We were hunter and gatherers. We weren't all just hunters. We weren't all just gatherers. Some of us were better at keeping us alive than others. And you kind of can see that take place. You can kind of see that assemblance when you get a group of young people together.
Well, yeah, you do see that. That there's, just like in a classroom, they have different skills, different interests, different sort of abilities. One of the activities is to build empathy for more than human world. And then we kind of translate that once you have empathy for wild nature, then you can have more empathy for each other. And that goes down a path which we can talk about. But one of the activities that we do is some of them are chipmunks, some of them are foxes, and they have to, you know, get enough, usually, you know, playing out in a field where there's dandelions. So the mice or the rabbits have to get enough dandelions to survive. And the fox are trying to get the kids who are role playing the rabbits. And, you know, they're just sort of, you know, who's good at, you know, what strategy do you get the food? Do you wait until it's safe? You know, and all the kind of things that are going on with it. Cause it's not necessarily just who's the fastest, because it might be the ones that are the quietest that, you know, that comes out. Or when another empathy activity we do is they have to build a bird nest. And so, you know, there, that takes another kind of skill and patience and willingness to try, and who can sort of, they have to build it with, we tell them they should build it with a paper, with a clothespin or a tweezers. That's the bigger challenge, but usually end up using their hands. But you just sort of see, you know, who can do that and maybe wonder, yeah, like who would be a good hunter gatherer down the line if this is, you know.
100%. And, you know, something that you said, that really excites me to think about, you know, sharing with your listeners, depending on, you know, where they're coming from in their own identity, is like this program, Diversity Education in Nature, is really inspired by just the premise that none of us are identity neutral. And this is not an original, you know, thought of my own. This is what practitioners talk about all of the time, and that we have an opportunity to think about how all of us, you know, really do belong to the earth. And when we think about looking at, you know, through the lens of all of our identities and looking at different points of intersectionality, it's amazing to see kids, you know, naturally connect, because they're so much further along from, you know, their place of being born. We also do this work of connecting adults, right, either back to nature or empower them to be affirmed with what their relationship with nature is. Like Dan, I think about when, and we've known each other for years. Dan and I have known each other for years. COVID brought us together. And like, that's a really powerful just like point of just kind of awareness that, you know, it was through Zoom and through connecting during a time of just looking at the world and looking at our community that DEIN was born. You know, these two educators that have a passion for community engagement and bringing people together really thought like, what can we do together? And I just want to say that as much as it's been powerful to watch students connect with what is our natural primal sense, it's been also really powerful to watch adults who have either lost their connection, right? Because we associate the outdoors with play and like, what is our relationship to play? What is our relationship to being in the outdoors and playing as adults? How many people get to keep that connection that is so natural to us? For some people, it's very different. Do you have access to green space, which was something Dan taught me a lot about when we first started this work together? What are the reasons that you might not? What parts of your identity maybe severed your connection to the earth, right? Whether it was your health status, right? Like I grew up a kid with asthma. Being outside was not something that I felt like I got to think about in a way that was joyful. I had allergies, I had trouble breathing, but then you also think about whether or not a kid or an adult has grown up someplace where they could be outside. What was their relationship to being outside? Did you have access? Did you have time? Did you have the availability? Did you have the resources, right? One of the first conversations Dan and I had, and then I'll pause here, you know, just to create more space for everybody, is just like, Dan, when you asked me about, you know, hurdles that I faced, and I talked about how old I was the first time I bought a pair of hiking boots, and like why that was and what that meant for me. And so like, we also have this fierce opportunity to help people consider in our program, especially if they're adults, what their relationship has been to the outdoors. Where was that relationship maybe severed, or why wasn't it cultivated or nurtured, so that we can also help people maybe restore or build a bridge back to this part of themselves that they lost for some particular reason, or that was never nurtured, so that we can all think about like spirituality and creating intestinal fortitude and connection to the earth in a way that is really about humanity as well, something that we all deserve.
Yeah, what's been so exciting working with Camille is that when I first came, you know, sort of like, oh, this is, let's do this with kids. And then Camille's like, no, we need to do this with adults. And so we did a seminar at the People of Color Conference in San Antonio that's run by the National Association of Independent Schools. And, you know, Camille thought, had this like, this would be really powerful to use DEIN to help build the resilience that people need to do DEI work, you know, for the practitioners, and how the outdoors can be a place of building resilience. And a big part of that was kind of showing, look, we never don't belong to wild nature. We can't not belong. We might lose our sense of belonging and not realize that we belong. And that, so we, part of our workshop was, you know, let's first, you know, let's build, make everyone aware of their sense of belonging. And I think a lot of that came from the idea that, you know, usually, oh, nature, you got to be in the wilderness, you got to be in the mountains, you got that, that's where it all is. And if you're living in a city, you know, you got to leave the city to go there. And as we, you know, talked and thought and walked and all these things together, it was like, you know, there's wild nature everywhere. You know, it's true. There's a continuum. We call it the continuum of wildness, that, you know, that depends on the human presence. But, you know, wherever you are, you can connect and find that sense of belonging. And that, what I wish we had the graphic with us, but so I'll try to explain it. But was, I think, really powerful for everyone is, you know, I mean, I don't know, Martin, I can imagine this might be a little bit for you. Like for me, I didn't find my sense of belonging when I was in an urban area or even a suburban area. For me, I had to be, you know, in the Catskills, in the Adirondacks, out west, and that suburbs and cities didn't count. So for me, I had to really go in that direction of feeling the sense of belonging in the suburbs, you know, in New York City or any urban area. And whereas, you know, some other people, you know, for a variety of reasons might not feel comfortable in a more wild, a place with less human presence and more ecological integrity. And for them, you know, let's help figure out how you can feel more comfortable in a wilder and wilder space. And then just so everyone has this, in either direction, the more you have that sense of belonging, you know, that's a place where you can start to build resilience for DEI work, for any kind of work. And so it was just cool to think about, you know, these just didn't work. The activities that work for children could also be ways for people to explore their own identity, you know, their own sense of belonging, their own, you know, intersectionality that they have in their lives. And, you know, so, I mean, that's just been just so cool about working with Camille. It's like, just, you know, well, we will take these walks, right? And then just like idea after idea, and just where this can all go.
People will ask me, and I've talked about it on this show about, you know, I want to hike, but you know, it's, where do I go? Well, you know, if you got a local park, and again, I grew up outside of New York City. I associate the outdoors with going up to the Kittatinny Mountains or up the Catskills. That was the outdoors. Yeah, you know, looking back, and I tell people, the outdoors is in your neighborhood, in your backyard, right?
Yeah.
You could go to your local park and you could find some really interesting things that connect you to nature.
Yeah.
Plant identification, bugs and weeds and things like that. Birds.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in that respect and regard, you know, we try to make sure that as a part of this sort of diversity education and nature experience, we are giving people what we call earth-inspired toolkits to just help them figure out how to plug in, right? Like how to go out into the outdoors and plug themselves in to all of what is around them. So Matt, no matter what your landscape is, no matter what your backdrop is, we're going to show you how to go outside with accessible materials and find your way. So like one of the things, Dan, I'm gonna like hype you up here because this is amazing. You know, one of the things that Dan is working on as a result of our program is like a guide to just walking and like teaching people and showing people like you can print out this handout and we're gonna give you things to do to think about how to take this walk. We're gonna give you access to like all of these resources that we found in our own journey that are free materials that are in the public domain, because sometimes people just don't know where to go to look and they've got supercomputers right in their hands.
All right. Yes.
You know, like we'll collate these resources for you because we want everyone to have access to figuring out how to make, you know, make their own adventures and find magic right in their own backyard, whatever that backyard looks like. Like I live in Bed-Stuy, right? And I think about my neighbors all the time. I grew up in Germany, surrounded by hills and all, but now I live in Brooklyn, right? And so I think about all the time, like, what does that look like for me when I look outside my window and I see a lot of concrete? You know, how are we finding access to green space and how can we help people find a way to make the outdoors magical wherever they are?
Camille, you talked about you work with adults, you use this program. So I'm curious, the difference between, and I don't know if you guys can answer this, if you've worked and can compare and contrast, but the adult response to this compared to children, how adaptive are adults to this or accepting are they of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to jump in first and then let Dan, please Dan, integrate and weave your voice in here. You know, so when Dan came to me, his vision was first for like, we got to do this with kids. And I'm like, absolutely. We're both so inspired by young people. That felt natural, right? Giving students a guide to outdoor education experiences and teaching them about things like biodiversity and symbiosis and interrelationships in nature. And really the whole premise is Earth as a role model. What's been amazing about doing this work with adults for me as a practitioner and as a professional development consultant is that adults need this as much, if not more, than our children do, especially adults that are stepping in front of young people every day, because we are role modeling for our young people about how magical this is and how to step into these experiences. And what I've found in this short time of us putting this content in front of adults, although I will say this about DEI work in general, where we're using a framework that is a little bit more low stakes and inviting people in, is that adults are looking for ways to have conversations about identity, about community building, about fierce conversations, about how to be change makers, and also about connecting to their inner self in ways that don't have as much social penalty as some of the other things that they're used to seeing. This feels a little safer. It has a little bit more psychological safety embedded in it. So what we see, what I feel like we see, is adults going, oh my gosh, where has this been? Like, I need this personal development time. Like, how do I get more of this? We find that adults don't want to leave the room. They don't want us to move on to the next activity. And they're going, where has this been? Of course. Why didn't I think of this connection before? You know, how many of these things can I take home? What can I start doing tomorrow? That's been my impression. Dan, would you agree?
Oh yeah. I mean, it is, and then one idea leads to another. I guess what I'm finding exciting is, you know, I love being outside. I just love being outside. I think it's so good, you know, all the health, mental, social, emotional, just so good to be outside. And to now to sort of, and you know, you read about all the benefits of being outdoor, you know, just, you know, everything. So I think like, wow, this is really a way to bring that to people. And then like, you know, I'm excited, you know, let's help people. That just be, you know, we were like saying, just go outside. Like everything else we're doing is just add it on. And then to, yeah. you know, connect that to helping myself and, you know, like, and other people, like, you know, be part of a movement in a way that they can feel like they're making a contribution and that they're not going to always be on the, you know, people are going to always be on the defensive and be open to learning. You know, that's just kind of exciting about, you know, kind of working with adults. You know, the kids are all into that, but I think some, you know, to be honest, you know, sometimes they're like pretty cool. You know, they're, I guess they're more excited about sort of the outdoor education, you know, exploring, finding the insects, all that. And that's super important. I mean, that's what's kind of cool. I feel like we're teaching so many different things at all at once, but it is kind of neat with, you know, cool with the adults that, you know, we can develop, you know, learn about some of these issues that can be challenging in a way that people are a little more willing to discuss and be open to. I know for me, I've just learned, you know, it's changed the way, I guess, you know, I thought I was kind of enlightened, you know, given how, you know, I grew up, you know, where I grew up, where I went to elementary school and high school, but you didn't realize now, not really, you know, like I was still in my own, you know, privileged bubble. So I think it, you know, it's such a way for people to open up and learn.
Yeah. I don't like to get political, so I don't want this to come across as a political statement, so to speak, but we do live in a time where there's circles that almost is a dirty word or a bad thing to want to learn about other people and want to be inclusive. Camille, you mentioned about how important it might be, more important for adults. I worked with youth for over 20 years. Those kids are sort of a window into their parents' values.
They absolutely are. They absolutely are. And you know, we understand that we're looking at young people and they are the future of, right? They're the next generation, right? And so we should be pouring into them. And so as an educator, I'm not abandoning that. That is absolutely our priority. But as a practitioner, what I also understand, I shouldn't say but, I should say and, is that adults that are in our schools, adults that are leading companies and organizations are impacting the world that our children are inheriting. And our children are watching us. They are watching us every single day. They're listening to the things that we say. They're listening to the things that we don't say. They're watching what we do. They're paying attention to what we don't do. And I think that at least for us as educators, and it pours into our practitioner work together, absolutely, we just know that healthier adults makes for healthier young people everywhere. And so like our values are many things. We value diversity, equity, inclusion, just as much as we value joy and fun and play. And the moment that we get adults outside, Martin, I have to tell you, you can immediately see the 7-year-old in an adult, right? When somebody goes in there and they dig up, right? And they're like in the dirt with their hands and they're like, I got the first worm, right? Like, and you see who's willing to run, you see who's willing to play, you see who's willing to be silly and go first. And like all of those things are in us too. The inner child comes out, and this work gives us the opportunity with adults anyway to offer people rejuvenation, restoration, the beginning of like healing in concentric circles, which is also something I believe in, and also just way opening to get people, especially adults, that we live in this world where we feel like we have to be perfect, we have to have every answer, we have to be fixed, or we have to have already arrived at some space of realization. It just gives us room to breathe and to be. And when we are in our fullness in that way, we are better for children. We just are, whether it's our role as parents, our role as school leaders, our role as CEOs of companies or startups or whatever it is, healthier adults make room for healthier generations of kids.
And that's why, yeah, I was really glad to hear, yeah, the adults, there's an adult segment to this, because the truth is, if the parents aren't buying into it, then their kids aren't. Their kids are going to kind of just poo-poo it and say, oh, that's nonsense, I'm not interested in it. It makes such a difference. And again, with my experience with working with youth, it's those adults that were like you had a buy-in in the program from. Yeah, you know, it was the parents who were there and were proactive and were being those examples. And you saw that in their children.
Absolutely, 100%. And that really inspired, you know, we started with version one that was for students. And then we immediately said, okay, so then we got to take care of the adults that are leading these kids in classrooms. So we have a version that's for educators. And then we built off of that and thought about, we don't just want to be in schools. You know, everyone needs this. All adults need this. So we have a version that's for organizations, and then also a specific version of the program that's for practitioners, people that are doing, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging work across industries. And so that's given us an opportunity to really think about how we can live fully and meet everybody where they're at. Because we want to meet people that are in education, and we also want to meet people just in any industry of the world.
You know, the outdoor education activities are the same with whatever group we're working on. Like we, you know, one of our main, like the bird nest activity, another activity is to, you know, what is the biodiversity in the place that you are? And so they collect, you know, we have nets to collect insects, or, you know, trowels to look under rocks, or binoculars for bird watching. Like, so part of it is just to take, you know, we call it like a bio blitz, like who's living around you. So we do that activity, right? You know, we have this activity called the Web of Life that shows the interrelationships in an ecosystem. We have another activity about mutualism, you know, a game, a sort of a tag game about how different organisms cooperate with each other. And so it's basically, those activities are all the same no matter what who we're working with. And we have like an indoor version and we have outdoor versions. You know, it's always better to do it outside, but sometimes, you know, we just worked with a school in Brooklyn and we brought in all this nest, you know, bird nesting materials, and they made the nest in a gym, you know, it works with kids, it works with adults. And then the conversations that follow where, you know, we have these sort of reflection activities and group discussions, you know, that, you know, shifts a little bit for depending on, you know, the age and the stage and who we're working with. But I think it's kind of cool how the base is still the same for everybody, is their experience, you know, connecting with wild nature.
It sounds to me that not just the diversity, but not just kids, but adults as well, can gain some confidence from this. From some of the things you're telling me, and it's not unheard of to have somebody who's in their 30s or 40s that have never touched a worm or a bug, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or just felt confident outside. You know, like one of the things that Dan really unlocked in me and created space for me, a way opening for me to feel into, was like, how much I didn't feel in my own identity confident even being in the outdoors. Who do I see in magazines? What does that woman look like? What does she dress like? What does she have access to? Am I strong enough to be in the outdoors? Am I brave enough to be in the outdoors? Do I have enough knowledge to be in the outdoors safely? And so like, yeah, it's really wicked to think about the fact that an adult at any age or a person at any age could be learning from a program like this and feel like after spending some time with us, maybe it's something as simple as like, I'm taking my family for a walk this weekend, or we're going to go plan our first hiking trip because we feel like we get it, or we're going to plan our first camping trip because my kids are jazzed about this. And I feel like I have some efficacy in this space now, or I at least know that through this program, I've built a community in my own neighborhood with other adults that want to help me do this thing. So like, yes to confidence building, yes to capacity building, and all of that just breathed, like we believe, like life and love and energy into communities if people feel more confident in these spaces.
And I think, well, you know, it's also kind of about confidence is, you know, I'm gaining confidence to be able to have conversations about diversity, equity, inclusion as a white man, and, you know, not be as afraid to say the wrong thing or, you know, or that. And so, yeah, there's, you know, I think DEIN can really help people gain confidence in that area too, so that they can have a conversation about it without, you know, yeah, I don't know the right word, but without just completely thinking, you know, second guessing yourself every time you say any word, but also having some knowledge about, you know, what is the right way to, the right words to use.
Absolutely, Dan. And, you know, I'm not sure how much of this you shared with Martin, but you know, for folks that are wondering about, you know, how these two things fit together, you know, maybe we haven't, you know, kind of fleshed that out enough. For us in the model of diversity education in nature, what we are doing is we are taking the earth as one of our greatest teachers ever and using it as a role model for all of the things it could be teaching us, that, right? Wild nature is full of examples of things that work. And through things like biodiversity and symbiosis and interrelationships in wild nature, we see examples of things in a natural ecosystem or a wild ecosystem that we believe can be mimicked in a human ecosystem. And we're saying, okay, look at all these things that the earth does. The earth is crushing it. Look at all these things that work and make it stronger. How do we then teach people about how to model the things that earth is showing us every day in order to make stronger neighborhoods, stronger communities, stronger environments in human contextual relationships? So how can we look at all of these things in a natural or wild context and add them into what we're doing on purpose in a human ecosystem to make change? And so that's really the whole premise of diversity education in nature. And that's, you know, how Dan can say, you know, it's through these experiences that I'm thinking about how to show up in conversations differently. So for each lesson that we're teaching, we have kind of skills that we work from, and then we offer a lesson of like, okay, look at this example in wild nature. Let's copy and paste this. What happens if we do this on purpose with people? So that's what we hope to teach.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that. It's using the design process of biomimicry. So like, for example, you know, there's lots of examples of, you know, two organs that are working together. Even when we, again, when we did this in the city, that you might see lichen, you know, lichen, how it's an algae and a fungus, and they're cooperating. They're both giving, you know, benefits to each other. And then we can turn that into a conversation. It's like, okay, how in your classroom or how in your office, what gifts do you have? What skills do you have that would benefit the group? And what skills do they have? How can that benefit? So just, you know, how can we mimic or, you know, think about it. One of our role models is a beaver and how a beaver builds a dam. And then there's just this cascade of benefits that come from that one single beaver dam and all the effects that have and all your, so, you know, what is a gift you can give to your community? And like, look how that'll go down the line. It's not just that first connection. It's the connection, the connection, the connection to sort of point out all the, you know, all those different ways and how that, you know, how can we then find ways to apply that where in our lives.
And it goes back to the green spaces that, you know, I can just like in my mind, I'm picturing going to a local park in any community, drawing a 20-foot diameter circle and saying, okay, well, there's a fly, there's a bee, there's a bird, there's some grass, there's some dandelion there.
Exactly, yeah.
They're all part of that community and they're all benefiting from each other. Not trying to kill each other or to knock anybody down. They're all working as one. They're different. They're all different and unique, but they depend on each other to survive.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
And part of what I'm hearing here, one of the things I did as a youth leader is I was part of what they called train the trainer. And that would be training adult leaders who were going to be training other adults. We used to joke, kind of joke, half jokingly, it's about fooling people to learn. You know, they let them learn, have fun. And then while they're doing, you know, make sure they're having fun and then they'll learn. Kind of, you know, almost like a trick. Oh, that was a lot of fun. And then at the end, reflect and say, yeah, but what did you learn? Oh, really? We learned something from that? And I'm hearing a little bit of that in this, that, right. Out there, do this. And oh, wow, I learned something.
Right. One of the coolest moments for us anytime we do this work or anytime we're running a workshop is when we see kind of the light bulb go on or the neurons start to fire, when we finish up what we're doing, that is our wild nature example or activity. And then we go to the next slide or we go to the next part or they flip the page in their handout. And then we're like, okay, great. So can you imagine this in your school? Right? Like if the skill is pattern seeker, now here's your question. Examine the systems in your school. If you're a pattern seeker, now can you look for pain points? And watching adults go, oh my gosh, like, oh, like that moment is so, so cool.
Right. How do you take the, if you're the hunter out there, how do you take those skills? How can they be, are you able to be that? Are you that person that can hunt down the materials you need for a project? Or, you know, if you're the gatherer, are you the person that can get everybody together and put everything in one place and make it happen? Yeah. And I think that's great.
Well, because the outdoors are such a great place to practice. Attentiveness. Like one of the things we do is, you know, being outdoors, practice attentiveness. You can practice pattern seeking. You can practice wondering and you can practice creativity because there's so many opportunities to practice that in wild nature and then bring those, okay, how are those skills going to help you work out some of the DEI issues that might be going on in your community? Like how does being attentive to other people and your, how's that going to help? You know, how does seeing the patterns that the positive patterns, then maybe not so positive patterns. You know, how does asking questions and how do you ask the right kind of questions and what and having a sense of wonder? And then how can you come up with creative solutions? So, you know, we practice that in the outdoors and then practice that in the human places.
And you're not going to get that sitting in a classroom at a desk looking at a whiteboard.
No.
It's not happening.
No. And it's such a magical thing, you know, getting back to kids. When I would watch in the beginning, you know, with Dan, he has students do observation logs and kids would come outside and we would start with, you know, them reflecting on the fact that they had done observation logs for the week. But we would start with a mindfulness practice when we get outside. And just having kids do a, you know, a 4-3-2-1, four things you can see, three things you can hear, two things you can smell, one thing that you're grateful for, and just have kids kind of settle into that. Because immediately when the outdoors becomes your classroom, the stimuli changes, but also we change. You see kids exhale, you see kids breathe in, you see kids kind of settle. And as they're deepening and settling, they're also expanding. And then you're breathing and then everything kind of just shifts. So like, it's just wild. And adults do it too, to see what happens when you just get people outside in fresh air, sun on their skin. It could even be cloudy. We see the same thing happen every time. We're organisms, right? We come alive. Right.
If we're stuck inside, we're not exercising all of our senses. And I just think that's important, right? If you just look, read, listen, no, you got to be smelling. Right. And you've got to get these senses in sync. Right. You're not, again, if you're sitting in a classroom or in an office, it's not happening.
No, it's always better outside. Everything's always better outside.
Exactly. That's what I say. Everything's better outside. I enjoy eating meals outside better. I just, every chance we eat.
I wake up every morning trying to figure out how much time I can spend. How do I spend as much time possible outside?
My wife will kid me and say, you're like a little kid, you know, you pace back and forth and like you want to get outside and play. I said, yeah, I do.
I love that. And, you know, may that never, you know, belong to age and stage. Like, why is that not the ever spirit of who we are as people? And so that's also kind of cool to think about. Not assigning that to a specific body or age or person at all. Like, may we forever be in a rush to get outside and to play and to be in wonder. It's amazing.
And I think to not think there's only one way to hike or one way to be outside, you know, it could be gardening, could be picnicking, could be climbing a mountain. You know, there's no one way to be in nature. And I think a lot of times it gets labeled as like, it's only hiking or it's only, you know, river rafting and something like that, but that, you know, a picnic in a park is being outside.
Yeah, Dan, that's such a beautiful point. And we talk about that in our work too, Martin, that if we really want people to feel like they belong and that the outdoors is for everyone, that also means thinking about everybody. You know, age and stage is a part of that. Health status is a part of that. We want anyone to feel like even just stepping out, and we say this, we talk to people about this all the time, even just stepping out into the outdoors, you could be sitting on your stoop and that counts. That's something. Mm-hmm. You could be going for a walk, right? It doesn't have to be extreme sports. It doesn't have to be, there's no one way to be, and there's liberation. And I think that makes more people feel like they can also belong.
Yeah. And Camille, you use that word liberation. I say this in my book and I've told people this, when I went out and hiked the Long Trail, I felt very liberated being out there with just what I needed to get from one place to the next. And Dan and I talked a little bit about this last time when he was on. There's that liberating feeling of, you know, I have what I need to get from point A to point B. I can get my water, I have my food, and I will get there when I get there. I'm not in any hurry. And I'm just going to enjoy every sound, every smell, every sight along my journey. And I tell people, you brought up, you don't, and this is the way I've always worded it. You don't have to be an Appalachian Trail thru hiker. Put a chair out in your backyard, start a little garden. You don't have to have a big garden. What do you see when anybody who's ever had a garden, all the organisms and life you see just in a garden, just in a little vegetable garden.
Oh, exactly.
Absolutely. And how can we be in wonder about being in nature and being outside, you know, just even taking the time to notice, you know, when we step out into wild nature, what are the things that I can see and smell and feel, and how is that informing how I feel today? I mean, you know, inviting people to just be outside in the outdoors and just breathe, that there's, you know, and because the outdoors has no critique of us. You know, we show up with all of these feelings and thoughts and wonderings and anxieties and all of these things that can show up in us. And it is actually an opportunity to think about being in relationship with what could be our oldest and dearest friend.
Now, Dan, I want to go back to something you had mentioned, you know, about we're white men, we're out there enjoying the outdoors and, you know, knowing not to say anything inappropriate or what's an appropriate way to behave. And Camille, you could relate to this, I'm sure, because I have had so many female hikers who have said to me, it always seems well-intended guys come up and want to help me set up my tent or ask if they can carry something for me. I'm out here. I'm doing the same thing you're doing. No, I don't need your help. Again, I tie this back to what you guys are teaching people is that, yeah, I mean, we're all surviving, but don't assume somebody is that they're weaker than us or have less of an ability. They may have different skills. Don't make assumptions.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah, this is a great example. Dan, what do you think about that? I want to create
space. Well, I know, you know, as there's been a lot more conversation in, I guess, the outdoor media, there's stories that women have shared. And, you know, it is really, I think, cool that how many more women are feeling, you know, I guess, comfortable to go hiking and be out. But yeah, you don't need men telling you what to do. That is for sure. Because, you know, we want to make that, you know, all these places accessible. But yeah, we need people just to, you just be helpful, not, you know, hurtful by the way, what they're thinking and saying.
Yeah. This is a great example of a conversation that if we were having it with adults that, you know, DEIN, you know, would be willing to just take on. Like, this is a fierce conversation that is about identity and also about bias and about the things that we naturally presume and like all the things that inform why we're thinking that way, because society makes us think these things and reinforces these things. But then there are also things that we can't necessarily control, like the generation that you come from or the culture that you come from and things that make us behave the way that we do. Socialization is real, right? And so there's like a conversation there that I love that would be a really brave one to have with people about, you know, like, so I'm a guy out in the wilderness and like based on where I come from and my age and my background, like I'm always going to ask a woman in the woods, like, can I be helpful with that? What can I do? Do you know which way you're going? Because like, maybe for me, I grew up on these trails and I'm just trying to be a helpful neighbor. But because we are not identity neutral, and this is what I was saying before, people are going to have their reactions and responses, right? So maybe the woman that's hearing this, if we're just being like super gendered and like being on a binary for a second, is like, guy, I also grew up in, you know, on these trails, like, thanks, but no thanks. But it's also her identity that's informing her response to that, right? I think about people of color that have stories, you know, myself included, that often feel like people respond to them in the wilderness like they don't belong or like they're lost, right? Like you're unpacking your stuff and they're like, do you know where you're going? Right? So like there are reasons that people show up in the ways that they do in these social interactions. And like what I would offer people with my whole heart is that we lead with inquiry, right? And we also approach people with a sense of humanity first. Like if we assume nothing but compassion on the part of the other person first, what kind of conversation would we be having? And, you know, to that end point, I just offer people the thought, again, not an original thought for me, but one that I believe wholeheartedly is just like, what is the quality of the way that we are showing up for people? What do we mean by whatever it is that we're about to say? And are we ready to be accountable for what dynamic that might create in their response? So we don't flee from a conversation if it doesn't go the way that we think, because we are connected in humanity and we should be able to show up in moments like that and be received well. But there's a reason that it gets complicated. And so we just want to encourage people through a program like DEIN to like be in your person, be in the conversation and stay in it, even if it gets a little uncomfortable.
Because that's one of the activities we do is we collect like all the insects and, you know, it's, so it's easy to ask questions about the insects and make observations about the insects and the worms because they're not humans. So I think that makes it easier for kids. And then we kind of turn that around and say, you know, why is it easier to ask questions about this caterpillar and wonder about the caterpillar? But if we want to learn about each other, we're sometimes kind of reluctant to ask questions about each other. Like, you know, why are you wearing that necklace? Or, you know, or what's that t-shirt mean? But also have the talk to students about like, what's the intention of your question? Like really, yeah. You know, before you ask, is your intention to really learn? Is your intention to kind of you know, be a little mean, you know, is your intention to like make a joke and get everyone laughing at this, you know, like, and I think that would also work with adults. Like, you know, when you're asking a question, to really try, before you ask it, try to think like, what is really my intent? Am I really trying to help? Am I trying to show off? You know, am I trying to subtly tell this person they don't belong? You know, like, what is your intention of the question? And, you know, we work with that with the kids, but I think that would also be true for everybody.
Yeah, it's all in the intention. I agree. You know, I'm not claiming to be parent of the year or anything like that, but I have three adult boys and I always told them, ask questions. You know, there's a way to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Do it respectfully,
mm-hmm.
do it with consideration,
mm-hmm.
but children need to be taught, and nature is a great way to do that. Ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask the hows and whys.
Yeah. Yes. And we want to teach people to be curious from young. Curiosity is a beautiful thing. Nature teaches us to be curious. How do we notice with kindness is something that we talk to our students about all the time. And as we're talking about intent, thank you, Martin. We as practitioners would say, if we're going to think about intent, we also have to be willing to teach about impact. And we teach about that in our program all the time, because you can have the best intention in the world, but being in community and being a steward of your community also means that if I'm going to seek connection, I'm going to be ready to be accountable for the impact that that might have. So it's okay to ask a question and be wrong. Right. And we think about how low stakes that is when we point at a caterpillar and we go, is that a caterpillar or is that a beetle, right? And the stakes are so low, right? And the impact of getting it wrong in that scenario is so different than like asking a kid in a classroom, like, wait, you celebrate Ramadan? I didn't know you celebrate Ramadan. I thought you said, right? Like, that's literally the comparison we're trying to help kids make. And it's like, oh, but those stakes are so different when we make those assumptions, right? So like, how do you repair? How do you restore? It's okay. It's okay that your intention was to learn. And once you hear the impact of what you did, making somebody feel different in a way that felt weird or making someone feel vulnerable, what do you do after that? Because we all get to be curious. We love curiosity. We all get to be learners. And being in relationship means that we take care of each other. So how do we use the earth as a role model for care? It's been a wicked journey.
This has all been very, what's the future of this program? Where are you going? We know what you're doing now, but is this something you're expanding? Camille, you do consulting work? Are you working with other schools?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is where Dan and my's footprint has some similarities and some differences that we've put together to complement one another. Dan has worked as an outdoor education enthusiast and consultant and educator with a beautiful history. And I have been in the consulting and practicing field for 14 years. And what we're doing together is sort of just taking this show on the road, right? So we had our presentation at the People of Color Conference last year, and that was sort of our kind of national preview of like, this is real. So now what's the journey? And we're literally starting with just one-on-one consultations for communities and trying to get this work into schools that want to pilot this program with us. And after presenting last year, we had a school that we pushed into just a few weeks ago, and we are going to be working with schools and communities that want to see diversity education in nature. We're again focusing on students, educators, different organizations that feel like they want to use this as a way to do DEIB work in their community. So we're just kind of calling it, we're taking the show on the road and just meeting people and building relationships, because what we're trying to do is build a community. And then from there, continue to just build what this platform is going to be. And one of the things that this connects to is our work with kids in nature. I'm not sure if Dan, you'd like to talk a little bit about that, but we are taking the show on the road and start
down the line. We want to, since we can't go everywhere, is to have a way people, like an at-home version that people could do between, you know, they would explore wherever community they're in, and they have the activities, and then whether through a workbook or through Zoom, you know, that we would have that, like to reach more people that way, since not everybody, we can't go everywhere and everybody can't come to where we are, but, you know, to use this to make it more equitable. Yeah, we have a long list.
Right,
absolutely. We have a long list of ideas.
Well, that's good, because you both sound very ambitious and very passionate about what you're doing. And that right there is the key. You both seem to really love what you're doing.
Yeah.
We do. Yeah. We love working together, which we also feel like really gives the brand just a a unique voice, and building community for us is the most important thing. So we have so many goals and dreams, but right now, like, we just want the ground to swell a little bit. We want to meet as many people as possible that feel as excited about this conversation as we are, so that we can just be in a bigger dialogue that hopefully will inform many communities and many systems.
I, for one, just believe we can be a much better society than we are right now. I'm giving my personal views here, which I'm just going to come out and say it. We're really hurting ourselves and depriving ourselves personally. We don't allow diversity in our lives, and we're not seeking diversity. I just think we're, as adults, we might be cutting our children short and ourselves. And as I said, society.
Definitely. Yeah.
Absolutely. We're living in a global world, and we're preparing children to live and be a part of a global world and a global market. And we do suffer. I mean, some of the world's greatest and biggest problems have only been and will only continue to be solved by the diversity that strengthens us. Even if we're talking about neurodiversity, diversity of thinking, diversity of resources, diversity of perspective, it's all about how we frame it. Our framing on that hasn't been healthy all the time. And that, I think, is what creates for young people, as they look at generations of adults before them, an unclear, just a lack of clarity around whether or not difference is good. And what we want to get people to thinking about as practitioners is that we don't need to think of difference as good or bad. Difference is objectively that. It's the presence of variety. What we decide that means is all for us. So framing is everything.
So for people listening, how can we support what you're doing?
Well, I guess tell as many people as you know about what we're doing. Just spread the word. I have a website, www.dankreisberg.com. So, you know, that you can reach us there. And Camille, and I guess, yeah, that has my email contact information. And then then through my website and through Camille's website, you can get to the DEIN website. But yeah, reach out. We just, let's talk.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us at contact@deinconsulting@gmail.com if you'd like to talk to us personally. It's not a bot. We answer those emails, and it's one of us that would be writing back to you. You can also find me at CamilleSimoneConsulting.com. What's great about how we're connected now is that getting to either of our websites reaches the other of us, because we're just a team in this work right now. We're just two practitioners and educators that have stepped alongside each other. So you can contact us at our DEIN email, contact@deinconsulting@gmail.com, or our personal websites. And be in a conversation with us. That's the best way to just kind of plug in. You can email us and say, what's up? Like, I'd love to hear more about what you're doing, and we'd be happy to set up a Zoom. We just want to meet folks and be in conversation and build relationship.
We'll make sure we put links in the description for the podcast, and we'll make this mutually beneficial. So what I'm going to tell everybody listening to do is take this episode and send it to as many people as you can.
Thank you. Yeah.
So we can all benefit. Yeah. Camille and Dan can get the support, and I can get more listens. And you know what? I wouldn't ask you to do this if I wasn't full-heartedly supporting what you guys do.
Well, we appreciate this so much, this opportunity. And let's all work together. It's the whole point. This is a good example of mutualism, that, we're like all the animals and plants that are working together.
1,000%. And thank you just for creating space. This is so powerful about community engagement work, to have reached out to you and for you to have connected with Dan Martin and just invite us so graciously into a community that you're creating, because that's what a podcast becomes. Thank you for inviting us into your community. Though we cannot see these people, we know that they're there and that they're listening. And I just want to express gratitude for the listenership and for you inviting us into this digital space.
Well, Dan and Camille, thank you for coming on here and sharing all this very important information with us.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much. This was awesome.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe. This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.